Hello everyone, this is Peter Paul Verzola, and this is September 1st, a very interesting day in the month of September, for the month of September, and for this year. A lot of things have been happening over the summer, and now we're into practically the Labor Day weekend. Among the things that have happened, of course, are the kidnapping and of that young girl in California, another kidnap case, and it's pretty disgusting. We seem to have a lot of this out here. But those of you who probably remember the Stephen Stainer case, a young kid who was abducted by a homosexual predator who had a previous sexual predator conviction and was in prison back in the 50s, Kenneth Parnell, I think was his name. This kid was in his clutches for 7 years, and then Parnell and his buddy tried to abduct another kid, or succeeded, and a kid named Timmy White, and I guess that triggered something with Stephen Stainer, and the police managed to find out that Parnell had abducted this kid and had held him for 7 years, and the other kid. And there was a famous trial in a movie called My Name is Stephen, or I Think My Name is Stephen. Unfortunately, Stainer, the kid, when he was about in his 20s, or 18, the trial, he did get married, became a Mormon before his death. He was driving a motorcycle. He had had his license suspended. A lot of these kids who are involved in these abductions have a lot of problems at readjusting, if they ever can, just as that woman in Austria, that her father wasn't an abduction, but he held her false imprisonment, as we call it. Anyway, what happened was he was killed in a motorcycle accident in, I think it was 1989. He had two kids, and it's a tragedy, but these things happen. One of the few world leaders, although she's royalty, the Queen of Sweden, held an international conference a few years ago, and people from all around the world who were concerned about international pedophilia, how children and young kids, young people under 18 are abused and abducted, and used as part of international sex ring pedophilia. And of course, there seems to be a bias against males who are raped, such as a Steve Neri case. You can see him on the web. You go to our website, or just type in Stephen, S-T-E-V-E-N-N-A-R-Y, the 18-year-old sailor who's been illegally imprisoned in the California prison system for the last 13 years. Story's up there. It's well documented. Part of his story is in the book, What's the Matter with California, by an author, well-respected Jack Cashel, who's written several other books. So you can check that out, and you can check out our website, amicusveritas.org, or just type in Verzola, V-E-R-Z-O-L-A.com, and it should roll over. But when the Queen of Sweden held this conference, it was interestingly, but not surprisingly, censored and suppressed in places like San Francisco and Boston. You didn't see this, and if you go back and look in the archives of those major papers, you won't find any reference to the Queen of Sweden's International Conference on Pedophiles and Sexual Predators. But it goes on, and you'd be surprised. It isn't only people like Barney Frank, who was running a pedophile ring or boy prostitution ring in Congress, along with his fellow Massachusetts Congressman Gary Studs, no pun intended, that was his name. But these things go on. The media people protect them, especially if they're politicians or politically connected or judicially connected. They are judicially protected. So it's something you should be aware of, especially if you're concerned about this, because now these kids are coming down with diseases. They're introduced to illegal drugs, and besides messing up their psyche and their mental equilibrium, it's quite a problem, and it's evil what these people do to these kids. And it all, they should pick on someone their own size. And it isn't about homophobia or any of that. Some of the most articulate spokespeople against this pedophilia are people who are gay in their private life. you know, they're the first ones to bring this up because they realize they are going to be unnecessarily and illegally and often unjustly fingered as the predators, sexual predators who prey on young boys and young girls when our young boys. And that's not the case. And, of course, we must look at women now who are just as bad. We're seeing more and more lesbians who do that, such as here in San Francisco, a group called CUAV, Community United Against Violence, which is a front for a bunch of pedophiles who've got a $1,000 a day contract in the to teach gay, lesbian, sexual preferences in the San Francisco Unified School District, and they've tried to infiltrate the other schools, the private and parochial schools. And what starts in California, especially in San Francisco, does not stay here, and it's the worst things that spread out like a flood of sewer water from a public toilet sewer line. Another thing that's interesting that people should pay attention to, the controversy, and it affects everybody, even if you're young and you haven't had any major illness or had to go to the hospital or injury, or you may have had broken bones as a child. You know, healthcare and the public policy issues surrounding that and a lot of misinformation that's out there and lies, distortions, and omissions. It affects everybody, and if you're 20, 25 now, you think you're indestructible. But if you're lucky to live to be, you know, in my age bracket, you know, late middle age, things happen, and the body starts to fall apart. Even if you were veggie, and you know, from the beginning of your life and all that, you're still susceptible to the rest of to old age. And as I used to tell people, the maggots get everybody eventually. But considering that something has to be done, even though we have since 1946 under the Hill, Burton, Lister Hill was a senator from Alabama. Harold Burton was a senator from Ohio, and no relation to the notorious, controversial Burton family who were representatives here in San Francisco and caused all kinds of problems in Congress and as well as here in California. But anyway, Harry Truman, when he was president, wanted a national health care system and didn't get it, but at least it was a beginning of a community health care system, which there are today over 4,000 of these clinics, community health clinics, and they're not connected, at least not right at this moment in history, to Saul Alinsky and that crowd, Acorn, and all these people, these activists who have tried to co-opt affordable housing and the educational system, the banking system, and all of that. But anyway, they do serve people, and one of the myths and misinformation is that illegal aliens will get medical care if national health care passes. They already get health care if they go into a community clinic. It's in the Code of Federal Regulations. I think it's book 45, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have it in front of me, so many things in front of me today, because we want to cover a lot in this 51 minutes remaining. But the services are there, and they do just about every basic HMO. They don't get into heart surgery or organ removal and implanting or whatever, that kind of thing, or major cesareans. But they refer you to a hospital or where you can be taken care of. And these people who have lost their health care are eligible. They should, if they don't know this, they better learn about it fast. And they don't have to go to the emergency room because the hospitals discourage that because of the great cost. And that's why there are drop-in clinics and community health clinics, which have a whole range of services, competent people. And if you're a doctor or nurse out there, you have some time on your hands, see if you can volunteer your time to help out at some of these clinics. They could use the help, and because funding, they only get about $9 to $10 billion a year so far. But I'm a believer, and I think, and several other people that I've talked to who are familiar with healthcare, think that more money should be put into this existing system, which works. We don't need another layer of bureaucracy and all of that. And remember, the administrators, and whether it's not these bogus nonprofits or corporation or government, the people that run the system get paid first, and it's true trickle-down economics. Nothing wrong with that, but that's just the way things are. So this is something to think about. Also, those of you who are late middle age and road age, you probably remember somebody you knew was selling Irish sweepstake tickets. And I brought this up last week. And this lottery was a private lottery set up in Ireland back in the mid-30s, 1930s. And it was they ran these horse races in Ireland. And Ireland produces some of the finest horses in the world. In fact, the Queen of England, who is a horse fancier, and that whole family, used to go to Ireland to look for studs, horses. And some very fine horse flesh over there, but they ran these races and they sold these tickets around the world. Many of them were counterfeit, unfortunately, and the Irish sweepstakes private lottery closed up, and I think in 1985 or 89, but something else has reappeared, and I haven't had time to check on it. But here's an idea. We have statewide lotteries or state lotteries around the country now, and I think in Canada also and other countries. Maybe that's a possible financing solution for some kind of a healthcare system to, for people who either have don't have enough healthcare or don't, who need healthcare or want an option to use this. I'm leery of the Obamacare, as a lot of other people, because we don't even know what it is, and I don't think they know what they're proposing, and we keep getting this song and dance from the politicians who are avoiding giving us specifics. And as I said before, that you need to look at every page of that 1,000-page document or proposed document, every paragraph, every sentence, right down to every period, so you don't get conned. And, you know, we need something, and to help people who need care and to keep something that we have like community health care so that people, that this service works and it can be improved, and there's no reason to create, I think, not to create another layer of bureaucracy, which is going to cost more money, you know, because even the doctors got to get paid. But that's something you need to think about, all of us. The other thing is, I want to get into September 1st because this is a landmark day in world history in many respects. But the other thing I want to get into is that we had a case of terrorists tried in a Ninth Circuit District Court here in San Francisco. The ART case was IRA terrorists who had fled from Northern Ireland after committing acts of terrorism in which people died. And San Francisco, the leftists welcomed them here and gave them shelter. Well, the feds finally picked them up and put them in the San Francisco County Jail. The British found out where they were and asked for a detainer so they could be extradited back to Northern Ireland to face trial. Well, the case went into the Ninth Circuit District Court here in San Francisco. A judge named Leggy, Charles Leggy, interesting background. He was formerly in Army Intelligence. And he recently, several years ago, retired from the bench. He's not even on half service. But anyway, and I think he's still alive, and he was involved in the Steve Nery case briefly, in which he said in writing that the jurisdiction over federal military was in the federal courts. And of course, this was defied by the San Francisco people in the DA's office, the Helen Ann's bad administration over there, which incidentally, his grandfather was a terrorist in Northern Ireland and was involved in the assassination of a peace envoy, Lord Cavendish. And that's on my website, amicusveritas.org, or again, type in Veritas, excuse me, Verzola, verzola.com, and it'll roll over. We've got about, taking maybe about 10 hours to go through everything that's up there. That's what somebody told me, who took the time to look at all of that work, which took about 6-7 years to put together. But the question is, if the Obama administration wants to close Gitmo and have these trials, will these terrorists be sent to the various federal court districts around the country, and how will these courts handle these cases? Now, what happened in the ART case was, it's called In Re Art, and I don't have the site in front of me. Before the federal judge issued an order to extradite Art and his buddies, fellow IRA buddies, back to Ireland, they sent somebody over, or an embassy official, somebody checked out the conditions of confinement in what was called the Maze Prison, M-A-Z-E. It had an infamous reputation. But what Judge Leggy found out, and it's in his decision, the court transcript of the case, that, get this, they had home visits. They had 24-hour telephone service. Now, if you were a prisoner in a state prison here in California, it's prohibitive. It costs you about $15 to make a phone call for about 7 minutes. You know, it's one of the controversies in the prison system. It's very difficult for prisoners, especially poor prisoners, to make their collect calls. And, of course, the prison have to listen in. It's legal eavesdropping, and they do it in the county jails as well, and it's necessary for security. But it's prohibitive. And but these guys had these calls. They were able to call 24 hours. They had home visits on weekends. There were Spartan conditions. Now, we had heard horror stories of IRA prisoners who are detainees over there who consider themselves prisoners of war, POWs, and they would strip off their clothes. They wouldn't eat. They smeared their feces all over them, all over the walls of the cell and all that. But Leggy found differently, and it's in his court record. So the question is, if these detainees or these alleged terrorists or suspected terrorists are moved to the continental United States and spread around for trial in the various federal court districts, how will these court districts, before they order these people either shipped to another country that will accept them, will they send somebody over or have embassy officials or whatever, FBI or whatever, examine the conditions of confinement in the countries that are willing to accept these people? Now, we know that I think it was the Chinese who were in Gitmo. They were turned over to Bahamian officials or Bermudan officials, and they're surfing and skin diving and all of that. That's what we hear. So I don't know if we're going to have that situation for others if this happens. So it's something that we should think about because, again, American taxpayers pay for all of this, whether they're in Gitmo or they're going to be sent to federal court districts around the country. They will not be out running around on bail, that's for sure. Excuse me. So that's something you should be aware of, and the media is not talking about it. Now, Glenn Beck is being pilloried, he's being plastered, and I'm sure they'd like to put him on a spike, the old way that, horrible way to torture people. They stick a pointed spike up a person's rectum, and that is a horrible, horrible death, and it takes 3-4 days to die in excruciating pain. But anyway, we have another George Soros political front called colorofchange.org. Oh, a nice euphemistic name. And they are trying to start this boycott against Glenn Beck, who interestingly adopted Mormonism recently, I think, after he said he was a recovering alcoholic. But you know, he's raised some serious issues, and I don't think he's a racist. And I'm an a multi-ethnic myself, and we raise serious issues. And this is an old trick of the left when they can't destroy your argument or refute your argument or refute what you're saying. They attack you and say, "Oh, you don't understand. If that doesn't work, they ratchet up the criticism and the tactic." And then when it gets to, especially if you're white or Jewish or whatever, and the person on the other end being activities are being questioned, that you're accused of racism, or if the person has sexual preference, they play the crotch politics crowd and accuse you of homophobia or lesbophobia, or you're against transgenders, and or you're against immigrants, and that's another misnomer, because everybody that crosses the border illegally is not an immigrant. They're aliens, first of all. And they're coming here either to work, and those who are you know, criminals are coming here to sell drugs, to extort money, for prostitution, and that sort of thing. And there are those types. And there are those people who are coming here to find work so they can send money back to their families and back in the country from which they left. And a lot of them would like to go back there and rather would stay there if there were the economy would support them and their family. So it's something that we need to re-examine because this cannot continue. It's really draining our national resources, and we need to pay more attention to the terrorists and the drug dealers and all these other financial manipulators who've been coming into this country. And I'll get into a major one in which we had a Filipino case, the notorious Garcia crime family, where they claimed they were being persecuted by Ferdinand Marcos' administration, when in fact his administration had a warrant out for Garcia for ripping off a government program, major ripoff. So he fled the United States and claimed persecution, and he made some political contacts. Well, he took over this bogus nonprofit, and wasn't bogus. It's called the Caballeros de Dimasalong, and it's one of the oldest Filipino beneficiary fraternity, and they did like a lot of fraternities. For ethnic groups, they would provide burial money, like $2,000, to the family that when one of their members died. Well, what he did was he hijacked the books, he hijacked the organization, put his people in, intimidated. They owned several properties around in Washington State, in California, and I think Oregon, and he sold off the properties illegally. He set himself up as executive director or president, and his family brought his whole family in, and they took over a senior housing project. People who protested were harassed. One woman, he caused her to have a heart attack. Another woman was maced as she was bending over to get her mail. Of course, the media covered all this up and said, oh, it's just an internal struggle. And one of the things he did, he was executed a real estate document on a piece of property. When the other members tried to oust him from the organization, Raul Almason, and we'll get into that, what Garcia did was he went to the recorder's office, got a deed, and executed it illegally to a lawyer named Cannizzaro to defend him against being purged from this organization, being ousted. And he sold, the deed was for over $250,000 on property that he did not own. He had no right to sign over to a lawyer. The lawyer illegally took the lien against the property as his fee to defend Garcia from being ousted from an organization from whose assets he had ripped off. And so then there were complaints made to the California State Bar, which turned a deaf ear because the Filipinos' senior citizens either weren't politically connected or, in fact, they had a couple of retired lawyers among their membership, but they weren't paying dues to the California State Bar, which has become a political joke. Because lawyers who like George Walker, and you can go look on the web, fee fraud artists, people like that, they take money from clients, and the clients complain to the state bar. The state bar just ignores it. So maybe it's time for state bar membership is required in California and in other states, but you know it's become more politically connected, and people who are politicians in these organizations are called barflies. Now, this is coming from a lawyer who was a member and also an executive in the California State Bar. I can't give you his name, but we used to discuss these things, and it could very well be that membership in the state bar, they claim to be an organization that has legitimacy. They were set up to last 50 years back in the turn of the century, and there's a document out, which I will publish because somebody raised the issue, that every California lawyer who wants to be registered and practice in California has to pay about $400 or $500 a year membership fees, and this money goes, part of it goes for infrastructure, of course, and part of it goes to pay a lobbyist in Sacramento who was making about $450,000 a year and did nothing but party with the legislators up there. So this is one of the scandals, and this is one of the reasons we have so many problems. Incidentally, the majority of people, the majority profession in Congress or occupation is our lawyers, and the dominant religion, get this, is Roman Catholic. So maybe that's why we have so many problems, and people are raising the issue about these Roman Catholics, of which I am, but I'm conservative. You know, these people may be in my church, but they're not allowed in my pew, nor are they going to be allowed to handle the collection basket, nor count what's in the basket. But, they, you know, how can they be Catholics and promote abortion, homosexuality, you know, laws that, you know, they're supposed to uphold not only the laws of the church, of the federal government, but the tenets of the religion that they claim they're adherents of. So especially Pelosi, Nancy Pelosi, who must be the most hated woman in America. But it's interesting when she was referring to people who were citizens who go to these tea parties to protest the abuse and the failure of the representatives, federal representatives, to hear and redress grievances. When she referred to them as Nazis, some of these people have relatives or had relatives who were either killed by Hitler or ended up in the concentration camps and barely survived. So they are livid and should be for people like Pelosi, who claims she goes to Mass every day and Holy Communion. Of course, the cynical joke is, does she go to confession before or after? And it's a sin, according to Catholic theology, it's a sin to take Holy Communion if, you haven't confessed your sins. So, she ought to be excommunicated. That's a growing feeling. Maybe we can get her out of politics. Maybe she'll retire at the end of next year to spend time in her vineyard. Where she got the money for the vineyard, that's another question. But, people should be aware of the legislators. And there are other legislators around the country who are just as bad. You got this clown in New York who succeeded Adam Clayton Powell. The one thing about Adam Clayton Powell, he was a minister, and he used to go to Bimini, but he got his work done, even though he was flamboyant and, he liked women and good times. But he, of course, was ousted from his chairmanship. But he claimed, and I think it's accurate, that he did get work done, and even though that he would, fly off to Bimini to have a good time and whatever. So, we should think of, Charles Rangel, that's the guy's name. He's another one that's been there too long. But I wouldn't be surprised that there's a bloodbath, political bloodbath or tsunami that sweeps over Congress because in the coming year, by the next election, people are so angry and they're beginning to articulate that anger. And thank God so far nobody has taken what they call direct action, which is what the animal rights people do, violent action against any of these politicians. Don't do that. Get them, just beat them at the polls and watch out for vote fraud. And we'll get into how groups have done vote fraud in the past and how these politicians got elected to that very vote, those very vote fraud techniques and practices. We have the records and so many things we want to bring out, but it isn't timely right now. But in time, we will bring them out. This month, September 1st, is when 70 years ago, World War II started. And, of course, the Poles were the first victims of Nazi Germany, Hitler, but also Stalin played a role. A lot of people don't know that after World War I, the Germans were restricted as to their size of their army, the size of their navy, and armaments. So what they did, they trained, Stalin let them train in Russia. This is very interesting. Also, about paratroopers, it wasn't the Germans that invented them or General Billy Mitchell. It was the Russians. And, of course, what they used to do, there's a movie of this or a news clip. They had this huge plane. And the Russians also were pioneers in aviation. I forgot his he came over here and invented helicopters, Sikorsky, Igor Sikorsky, that's the guy. Anyway, there's this picture of this video of these Russian paratroopers sitting on the wing of this huge plane, and they jump off. There was no jumping out of no ripcord or anything like that, or jumping out the door or being pushed out the door. They just jumped off the wing. I don't know how many survived, but they had created quite a few tactics, and those you who are students of history or want to be, they had Henry Ford went over there in the 30s or sent people over there. People like Walter Reuther, United Auto Workers, and his brother went to the Soviet Union. And then, of course, Paul Robeson, the black singer. And he also had a law degree, and he was a great athlete, but his politics were screwed. And it plays a role in what's happening in Russia today. I don't understand how a black person or an African or a person, quote, of color, which is the term used today, can be a communist, because they are just as racist as any Ku Klux Klaner, and there have been attacks on especially Africans and blacks in Russia and in other countries. And if you notice in Cuba, the leadership, you don't see any blacks. And Cuba, when it was part of Spain, was a port where slaves were dumped, and when Spain was in the slave trade. And of course, there was intermixing, just as there was in Brazil and Colombia and other South American countries. We call them high yellow hair or mestizo. But you don't see any blacks. I haven't seen any, and I'm familiar with Castro from 1960. Excuse me. But you don't see any blacks in high up in the Cuban echelon political leadership. And I don't recall seeing any blacks in Brazil, which was the last country in the world to abolish slavery. They had an emperor named Dom Pedro, and they booted him out. But that was the last country to abolish. Portugal was the last country in the world to abolish slavery, and they had Mozambique, and they had problems there, and they finally ousted the generals and their dictatorship. And we have a radical kind of left-center government there, as in Spain. But, you know, these people were notorious for their caste system. And, of course, the Indians, there have been Indian, you know, there was mixing of blacks and Indians and of Spanish, Castellano. So, you see that today in the complexion, even in Mexico. A lot of people don't know that there were black Mexicans. There were Africans who were mixed into the indigenous people down there. So it was there. Incidentally, one of the political fictions, and this is a fact, the first Asians in North America were not Chinese. They were Filipinos. And what happened was in the 15th century, after Magellan, well, he was cannibals killed him and ate him, but Spain colonized the Philippines, and what they did was impress the young men, the young males, onto their galleons, and they abused these young men. God knows what, you know, all kinds of things that went on. That was, you know, they were on the sea a long time, and so the first land that the ships sighted. Particularly in the Gulf of Mexico, the Filipino kids, youths, young men, jump ship. And some of them probably intermarried, which often happens, with the indigenous natives in places like Mississippi, Texas, possibly Florida, and those places. It's interesting, the ancestry of a lot of these groups and people. And I think, I don't know if Elvis Presley, he had some Native American blood, I believe, but, you know, it's just fascinating to look at. But getting back to September 1st and starting the war, that both Stalin and Hitler, they made the Malenkov, the two foreign ministers of those countries, made a deal to carve up Poland. The Russians came in on the east, the Germans came in on the west, and the Poles, you know, they're brilliant in mathematics. They invented the Ultra machine, but they didn't have the tanks. They were they had cavalry, horses, and of course the horses were horribly slaughtered. Well, that was just the beginning of the slaughter. We had, and there's a movie out, and it's coming up again, what Stalin did to the cream of the Polish army after Poland was defeated. That was just the beginning. What happened was there were about 10,000 officers in the Polish army, and they were captured and prisoners of war. Well, Stalin had his long-term plans, and he executed them and tortured some. The NKVD, which is the predecessor of the KGB today, or what they call the Federal Security. I think that's what they call the Russian KGB today. But anyway, they were murdered and buried in a place called the Katyn Forest. And for years, during the war, the world thought that the Germans had done it. But the Germans were smart. They had pathologists. When they found out where these bodies were, they dug them up and had a pathologist, an independent pathologist, come. And they said, well, wait a minute. You claim that the Germans murdered all these people, but the Germans weren't here during this period. Look at the coats that these soldiers are wearing. They were wearing winter clothes. So, and then, you know, who do they look to? Stalin, and of course, Stalin just stonewalled, as he stonewalled a lot of things. And it wasn't until 1989 that, I think it was Gorbachev, finally admitted that what they said didn't happen had happened. Not only that, there were about 25,000 other Poles, intelligentsia, and we're not talking only about Jews or people who, you know, Jewish ethnics, because a lot of them did not practice. They were also murdered and tortured by the NKVD. But what's also interesting, out of this World War II period, and it's a case that's peripherally I'm connected to, was this General Andrei Vlasov. He was born September 1st, 1900, and he was in the Russian army. He's Ukrainian, and he was one of the heroes that turned back the Nazis at the gates of Moscow. I think the Germans advanced in Operation Barbarossa to about 30 miles from Moscow, and people in Moscow could hear the cannons and the fight, you know, the guns and bombing 30 miles away. But Vaclav was captured by the Germans, and he wanted to set up a pan-Slavic union. And, of course, the Ukrainians have never forgiven the Russians for what they've done. One of the things that have been that the Pulitzer people has never cleaned up, they gave a Pulitzer Prize back in the 30s to Walter Duranty, who was a correspondent of the New York Times in Moscow. And Stalin co-opted him. I don't know what his sexual preference was, but he gave him a houseboy, a car, vodka, and morphine, because Duranty had a bum leg. And when Stalin decided to collectivize the farms and the kulaks resisted, he deliberately starved an estimated 25 to 30 million people. And, of course, Duranty covered this up in his dispatches to the New York Times. He got a Pulitzer Prize back in the 30s, and they have never taken it away. So this is something that, you know, it doesn't look good for the Pulitzer Prize. And this is another thing. When people get prizes, you shouldn't only look at, oh, they got a prize. Look at the person. What have they done? What have they done before? What are they doing? Are they worthy of the prize? Is the prize worthy of them? What are they going to do, or what are they doing after they got the prize? So the prize in and of itself is meaningless until you look at all the aspects around the recipient of the prize and the people giving the prize, because you'll find that some of these prizes are given and there's big fraud involved. For instance, another Pulitzer Prize went to a woman at the Washington Post who invented this kid who in a HUD project in Washington who supposedly got hooked on crack cocaine or cocaine, one of them, and died, and forgot her name, black woman, and she got a Pulitzer Prize. And then the scam was her fraud was discovered, and she was, I guess, fired or released from her contract in the Washington Post, and she had to give back the Pulitzer Prize, but not the Walter Duranty Prize, which was much worse. And there is a video, a rare video out, we have a copy in our archives, of what Stalin did in the deliberate starving of the Ukrainians and other kulaks in Russia, one of the biggest extermination programs in world history. And these people who are Stalin supporters or admirers or closet Stalinists, that whole commie crowd, I don't know how you could have respect or give these people any credibility, because we're seeing them right now in our own politics, and they're surfacing. It's something that you should be aware of, because they're trying to collectivize this country. That's the view of a lot of other people who are aware. Excuse me. This is all, and now, since we're on the media thing, one of the great media innovators, a guy named James Gordon Bennett, who was born in Scotland in 1795 and lived to about 1872, started the New York Herald. It was kind of Inquirer of the day, but he did hard news. He was the first guy to investigate Wall Street. Madoff wouldn't have gotten away with the things he got away with, nor a lot of these other people. And he started the paper with about $500. He emigrated legally here to the United States, and he was the first guy to set up European correspondence in Europe to feedback news to New York. I think it's Herald. And also, he was the first guy to, he had 63 war correspondents during the Civil War, American Civil War, and they were reported news, and he spent over $500,000 on these correspondents so they could get the news back for his papers. Quite an innovator of his time, and he was the first one to use the telegraph for news, and it's his birthday today. And those of you who are interested in music, if you've heard of the Pachelbel's music, it's his birthday, born in 1653. Also, those of you who like Hansel and Gretel, Egelbert Humperdinck, not the singer, but the composer of Hansel and Gretel, he was born in 1854. Now, we hear the term in politics, the Great White Hope. Now, that term, it was a movie about 20 years ago, refers to the black boxer Jim Jeffries, who was a great boxer. He was as good as, if not better than, Joe Louis or Foreman, or George Foreman, or Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, whatever. But anyway, he at the turn of the century, he flaunted the mores of the time, which he was an extremely dark, anthracite black person who had a white woman. And, of course, a lot of people resented that, and he flaunted it, and he was accused of immorality, bringing a woman across state lines, all that sort of thing. But he was a great boxer. And the great white hope at the time, they were looking for a white boxer to dethrone Jim Jeffries. There's a great movie, James Earl Jones stars in it, and the great white hope was the term given to Gentleman Jim Corbett. Corbett refused to fight Jim Jeffers, but it's James Corbett's birthday today, and he died, I think, in 1997, born in 1892, 1997. Those of you who like Tarzan, it's Edgar Rice Burroughs' birthday today. So, you can go yodel and look for Jane out there. I'm just joking. But interesting birthdays on September 1st besides the war. There's tragedy, the war, the Steven Stainer case, although his birthday is in September, but it isn't on the 1st. These are things to think about. Since this is also the anniversary, the 70th anniversary of the beginning of World War II, I want to bring up a public service announcement for my friend Art Burnclaw of New York. He started his career, he was a veteran of the Korean War, although he didn't go to Korea, but he was in the Army, and he likes baseball, and he played baseball with Ted Williams of the Boston Red Sox. He didn't make it to the majors, but that's one of the things that he enjoys. He's a baseball aficionado. But he started a group, or is part of a group, called Veterans for Constitutional Law. They've got a lot of politicians upset because Art does things that really the politicians want to pull their hair out, because as he sees it, they are violating the promises that the government has made to veterans to provide them with adequate health care, pay them and provide them with legal assistance when they have to go before the Veterans Administration to try to get the benefits that they claim are due them. And one of the other things is controversial, and that is he wants to get rid of the FERES, F-E-R-E-S, doctrine, which dates back to 1950. I brought this up before, where a veteran who was injured while he was in active duty service, and he sued the government, went through the federal courts, right up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the court kicked it back. It was the Supreme Court Chief Justice Vinson. Incidentally, we have the same birthday. But anyway, he was the predecessor to Earl Warren. But anyway, they said no, that Congress writes the laws, and it's in the Constitution that Congress shall raise the armies, raise and maintain, I think is the phrase. Of course, in San Francisco and California, the judges here, especially in the Steve Nery case and other cases, flaunt that, and especially those veterans whose wives or ex-girlfriends or whatever were suing them to get part of their Veterans Administration disability. Famous case called the Mansell case. And the California Supreme Court ruled against the veterans, and none of those people on the California Supreme Court have served in the U.S. military. Oh, one has. Chinese guy served in Vietnam War. But Ron George and the rest of those clowns up there, regularly defy federal authority over the military. And we'll get into that another time, because it's all documented and sealed by the signed by the clerk, these decisions, again, not upholding the rights and the authority, rights of military personnel, and the authority of the federal government over military personnel. And that's preeminent in the Steve Nery case. We'll get into that another time, because there are some new developments besides his request that Governor Schwarzenegger parole him. Now, the other governors where these cases are, in Virginia, there was a partial parole given to the four sailors in the Norfolk Four case, another railroading case of corrupt local cops railroading these sailors who were semi-literate, and that's a similar case with Stephen Nery. And there's other cases in California, Marine case, which I brought up, and we'll get back to that. And then there's the Tim Masters case in Colorado, and there's a couple others around the country I hear, but I don't have the specifics, so I won't say anything further on that. But one thing that I truly believe in, since my family has been military since time immemorial, is that, we expect these people, to go into the service, put on a uniform, risk their lives, lose their limbs, lose their sight, lose a lot of their facilities. We expect them to defend, not only defend us, but to die for us if necessary. We should respect the rights that they have as military personnel and the benefits that they were promised. After World War One, there was an infamous veterans march on Washington, which ironically, General Douglas MacArthur, who was chief of staff, was ordered by President Hoover to disperse the bonus veterans. The veterans of World War One were promised bonuses, which they never got. And it was, depression time. They went to Washington to demand redress of grievances and payment. And General MacArthur ordered, President Hoover, to his shame, ordered them dispersed. General MacArthur had to do it. And there's an ugly picture of him looking like he's strutting, but that was just his style. Incidentally, the election in Japan, they can thank Douglas MacArthur, the famous book, if you want to read an interesting book, American Caesar by William Manchester. He also wrote the book on Kennedy. But this is interesting. Douglas MacArthur was allowed to do in Japan what American Lucius Clay and others were not allowed to do in Germany. He took over the whole island, or the whole country of Japan, and remade it with democratic institutions, and the Liberal Democratic Party, I guess is equivalent to what we would consider our conservative Democratic Party, ruled the country since after World War II, and they were recently, Sunday, they were ousted at the polls. So we'll see where this new government goes. But also all the war criminals, and we see their stuff today, Matsushita, Yamaha. Did you know that those of you who drive some of the cars, Toyota, Isuzu, Mazda, those manufacturers, those Japanese combines made war materials like tanks that went through the jungle, very good tanks at the time. So it's interesting. And Matsushita was a shipbuilding. They built those, the biggest battleship in the world, the Yamato and the Matsushita, which I forgot the other name, which were sank, it took them 48 bombs, took our Air Force, our Navy pilots, 48 bomb runs to sink the Yamato. The biggest battleship was, I think, close to 70,000 tons, bigger than the Bismarck, bigger than the Missouri, bigger than the New Jersey, that class. Our biggest class of battleships that were built during and after the war, near the end of the war, were the New Jersey class, or the Wisconsin class. And those are the Wisconsin. Our battleships are named after states, or were. Now they're naming them after other entities. We have, and those of you who are interested in military history, those of you, Charles de Gaulle's birthday is coming up in there. Some interesting connections of de Gaulle to San Francisco. One has to do with the murder or the unsolved homicide of Hugues de la Plaza, which CBS on 48 Minutes, it's expected, this is September, next month they're going to air supposedly what they filmed here in San Francisco on this young man's death. His father was in the French Navy, and people are wondering why is the French government from Sarkozy on down, spending all this time and money to investigate a local homicide, because De La Plaza had become an American citizen. So they had French TV, French radio, French magazines. They practically swamped the neighborhood, and still were unable to find out how and why this young man died. So that's going to be interesting. So we'll keep you posted on that one, because we've never seen anything like this, where a French magistrate was allowed to come into the United States and investigate on his own, or her own, I think it was a woman, a homicide case involving a former French citizen. Or he may have had dual citizenship. That's something we ought to look at, too. But that's going to be interesting how this thing pans out, because a lot of money and time has been spent on trying to find who may have killed, or how did Hugues de la Plaza die with all these knife wounds. And initially the report was, well, he committed suicide, but the way the knife wounds were, even though he was a martial arts expert, it just doesn't seem possible that he could have inflicted these knife wounds to himself and killed himself that way. But he was drunk that night, and we're going to be putting out some stuff that we've done, some of our videos. But we have putting together the American Military Poverty Law History Project, a lot of rare military history that's still relevant today. I've done some videos on, and two of them are up on my YouTube program. Go to Amicus Veritas, A-M-I-C-U-S, V-E-R-I-T-A-S, and we'll be updating a lot of things. Also, we are in progress right now in production, our updates on the early, we've been doing the whole survey of terrorist attacks on not only San Francisco police, but also in public buildings. This is something that the media hasn't talked about, because we have so many people in the media who are either sympathetic or left-wingers or just lazy or ignorant. But that's coming, and there will be more eclectic things up on the Amicus Veritas YouTube site. We've got most of the software problem licked, I think, and I hope, because it's very frustrating. And those of you who've dealt with software know exactly what I'm talking about. The other thing is, you know, if you have questions or comments or suggestions for programs or some questions about things that I've brought up, feel free to email me at pverzola, P-V-E-R-Z-O-L-A, at gmail.com. And nobody's called in. I don't know what's going on. There's 8 minutes to go. And the call-in number is 1-347-633-9620. I hope this program is going out. It says on live, now 8 minutes remaining. But I don't know if this is a bad time. We're trying an hour, and so this will affect listeners on the East Coast, which is what we were going to try to reach. Excuse me. So we'll see how this works out. But I was trying the early morning, 8 o'clock Pacific time, and it was a bit too much. We'll see where things go with me. Change the time again. But we are concentrating on our YouTube site, a lot of video stuff of interest. It's informative, it's provocative, and it's eclectic. There are a variety of things there. And we'll be giving you practical information on things like how to deal with car accidents and how to prevent what to do. It's surprising. I am appalled at the number of people in SUVs and the expensive BMWs. And I remember when a Porsche was a little car. Now they're as big as a T-30, as a Panzer tank, some of these things. And the way these people drive them, like they have attitude. They're constantly yakking on the damn phone or texting. They have not learned a lesson. They will not follow the law. And it's like one person gave a couple of fingers and a few other things. But, you know, if they get in an accident, tough luck. So, well, it would be unfortunate for the person who's on the other end of their bumper or whatever, or under the wheel. But there's this attitude out there, and I don't know if it's just arrogance or just people don't give a damn or what, because in San Francisco, the former police chief and former mayor, Frank Jordan, used to say that it's anything goes, and he wasn't referring to Cole Porter. It's just that there's an attitude here, and it may be present throughout the country in certain yuppie sectors of society, especially that they have entitlement. They it's their due, and if they don't like the law, they can ignore it, or if they can't ignore it, they will defy it. That's what goes on here, and it's a continuing problem. People are getting tired of it, and I think with the economy going further in the tank or in down the sewer, down the toilet, whatever. People are going to say, hey, you know, we have to toe the line. You should, too, and you will be made to toe the line or else. And I think that's the way it should be, because these violations, these car accidents, this is one of the worst places statistically for car accidents, automobile and vehicle accidents. And, of course, these stupid people who walk across the street yakking on the damn cell phone, and they're not watching out for traffic or watching where they're going or watching the lights. We've had, and I'll bring this up because I used to do look up some of these cases for the law firm and research them. We've had cases where courts have found the plaintiff who was injured, who was on a cell phone walking across the street, yakking away, and was hit by a car. And courts have found in the favor of the defendant, which was the car driver, because these cell phone people, cell phone pedestrians, weren't paying attention. And also, it's particularly annoying to see a woman with babies yakking on the phone, not paying attention to the safety, not only her own safety, but the safety of the child or children. So, and then there are the ones with pets, too, dogs, because dogs get off lead and create problems. You know, people don't want to run over dogs, especially in California. excuse me, you'd rather run over people, but not a dog. That's a joke. But actually, it has happened, and I know people who prefer dogs to people, and I can understand where they come from. I don't always agree with it. But these are things that people are doing, and it's just intolerable, and you know, they should be reminded that, hey, every time there's an insurance claim, you are affecting my insurance premium, whether it's medical or auto insurance and collision or whatever. We all pay for the stupidity, the callousness, the laziness, the ignorance of these people, and it's time to put a stop to it, especially the tailgaters and the people who change lanes without signaling or who are on the cell phone or who have – the other one is they have pets in their lap. And you know, if you're a man and that pet – makes a certain movement and causes you distress down there, you could lose control of the vehicle, and it has happened and caused a major accident, which anybody that has auto insurance or who pays taxes or whatever, you're paying for that person's auto insurance claim as well as any medical expenses that the person incurs or causes and or causes his victim, and all for, you know, the stupidity of having a dog or a cat in your lap. So these are things that people should be aware of, and the rest of us should make these people aware of it, even if they don't like it, because, you know, unless you want to continue to pay. Another thing that's coming up, what I call the coupon clipping queens. I'm never cease to be amazed to be in a checkout line and a woman in front of me or, you know, in the line whips out a huge pile of coupons. Well, here's something to think about. What are those coupons pushing? What are they giving you a discount on? Is the product healthy? Will it really do what you you know, what it claims to do? And is it worth you spending the time to clip it and think you'll get a dollar off? Although they've got a new racket going, you've got to buy two to get one, you know, one coupon discount. So it's not only, maybe I'm just being critical, but it's not only, you know, what the discount is to you when you use the coupon, but what is the quality and of the product that the coupon is being offered for. So it's something that, you know, you might want to look into if you don't care, you know, especially if you're concerned about additives in food and drinks for yourself as well as your family. So that's something, you know, you may not be aware of or have thought of, but you might want to think about that. And we have 1 minute remaining. I'm getting a little hoarse here. I hope that these segments are informative. I'm going to be putting up, I found General Engel, Brigadier Engel, he used to yell at me about that. Very specific, the English are very touchy about their military ranks. And the last survivor, British-American survivor of Gallipoli, we have those tapes. We finally found them, and so we'll be offering excerpts because they'll be relevant with the time. And, of course, all of our emphasis and the blood and treasure we're losing in Afghanistan, which General Engel thought, as he used to say, the British were up there, had four campaigns, and they got their butts kicked. So the attitude was contain it. So that's something that maybe the next British government should think about, that, you know, maybe you need a force on the border up there to keep the Taliban within the boundaries of that country and to stop the heroin trade, the poppies. The poppy is also a flower. That's a movie which you should see about how, it's very accurate about how poppies come out of Afghanistan and go through places like France and Italy, I think Greece also, and we end up on the streets of New York or Chicago or Los Angeles or San Francisco or Toronto or Vancouver. So there's a lot of interesting things out there, and as I also say, art is true to life. But catch the Catton Forest Massacre movie if you're interested in history. It's very relevant. And I hope that this has been informative, and we'll be back soon. And do go to the YouTube Amicus Veritas. Thanks for listening.